there, and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Annie Reese.
And today we are still talking about honey.
Still.
Forever.
It's the honey show.
It's the honey show now. Honey stuff. Because as we found when we started researching this topic, there's so much history. And so we decided to split it into the kind of cultural history for the first episode. And in this episode, we're going to talk about the medical history and modern research going into the really completely incredible things that honey can do for you.
Right. Have you ever been recommended to use honey for medicinal purpose?
I have a friend of mine is an esthetician, and she always recommends doing honey facials, which I have done and forgot to tie my bangs up first.
Oh, no.
I have fringe, and it was a huge mess.
Honey gone wrong.
but my skin felt really nice afterwards.
Okay. I guess there's that.
have you?
yeah. When I was in Peru hiking, the people I was with highly recommended these lozenges. They were honey and the coca leaves for altitude sickness and like the dry air. And I can't say if they worked or if I just was desperate for some kind of relief, but I was like popping them one after the other.
Oh,
this caffeine, and then it would coat your throat.
That does sound fun.
Yeah, it seemed to work.
Yeah.
And we are definitely not the only people to use honey as some kind of medical curative medicine type thing.
Yes, absolutely not. Yeah, this goes back to like Sumerian clay tablets.
Yes. Honey is sometimes called the oldest medicine known to man. And the first record of honey being used medicinally goes back to those Sumerian clay tablets that were, the dates range from maybe 1900 to 1250 BCE.
Yeah. I saw reports going like even 100 or 200 years older than that. History is hard. No one knows.
Historical numbers are fun, as we say.
Yay.
But yes, 30% of the prescriptions on one of the tablets used honey.
Wow.
30%. The Egyptians were all about honey. They loved honey. Seriously loved it. And they primarily used it to make ointments that treated diseases of the skin and eyes. But that wasn't it at all.
No?
No. There was so much. A 1500 BCE manuscript from Egypt detailed how they would use honey as a remedy both internally and externally as a surgical dressing for burns and ulcers, or if you had some eye inflammation going on. And it was also a component in laxative and worm remedies.
Worm remedies?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently our ancestors were just filled with worms, y'all. Sorry.
That's not a sentence I was expecting in this podcast today, but I'm happy it's there.
There's some really fascinating stuff about genetics and how people had to like adjust to how infested they were with worms. And like we've kept those genes even though we've gotten rid of our worm problems. And
oh,
they're like negative consequences for health purposes in some ways.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. I think it's like Norse kind of area people. I'll have to look it up sometime. It's great.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Send me a link about that.
Okay. Worm.
So cool.
Worm tangent.
Yes.
back to honey. Welcome to food stuff. Sorry about it.
Sorry about it. Worm tangents galore. Okay. So a lot of Egyptian medicines were some form of milk, wine, and honey, like mixture.
Mm-hmm. And that sounds delicious anyway.
It kind of does. I'm not sure how the milk and wine would go together, but hey. Mm-hmm. They also sometimes offered honey to their gods as a sacrifice. So, like, they really respected this honey.
Yeah.
They could not get enough of it. And they weren't the only ones. The Greeks, they went further. They used it as a medicine, often mixing it with not wine, but grape juice. And athletes would drink a mixture of honey and water for energy before major events.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. A lot of energy, a lot of carbohydrates there.
Uh-huh. Also, Aristotle wrote about it around 300 to 400 BCE, as that was the time that he was writing things.
Yes.
And living. he said that pale honey is good as a salve for sore eyes
and for wounds.
Yeah, so we're already kind of seeing a theme here.
Yeah.
Like eyes and general cuts, anything on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Honey also pops up a number of times in the Bible. One of Solomon's proverbs was, quote, "My son, eat thou honey, for it is good."
I'll take it. Sure.
Moses got some honey out of a pebble, and the Jews believed it would make you more, quote, mentally keen.
Mm-hmm.
Saul's son, Jonathan, used honey to regain his strength. Yeah?
Sure. Meanwhile, Hindus touted honey as a curative for coughs and stomach problems.
Mm-hmm. The Quran also talked about honey's healing ability. Quote, "And thy Lord taught the bee to build its cell in the hills. There issues from within their bodies a drink of varying colors, wherein is healing for men."
Muhammad is said to have recommended honey to treat diarrhea.
So it popped up in a lot of religious texts. Hippocrates also recommended honey for a variety of ailments, including difficulty breathing, since it caused spitting, his words, and to clean sores. He even thought it was good for some plants, claiming that soaking the seeds in honey would make whatever it was they were growing taste sweeter.
I remember cucumbers. I don't think that's an accurate statement of fact.
Don't think so? Maybe that's an experiment we'll try.
Sure.
He also recommended it as a potential treatment for baldness. Apparently, this keeps popping up, like along with onion juice.
Right. Juicing episode, yeah.
Balding was a big concern.
Yeah.
Then and now.
But balding, I was just reading another thing about this earlier. Balding was associated with syphilis. Syphilis would cause premature hair loss. So especially if you don't want to be running around, like having people be like, "How's that syphilis doing, bro?"
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
You would want to get rid of it.
Yeah. Written mentions of honey are spread throughout Europe and in China and certain areas of Arabia during the Middle Ages. It was most commonly prescribed to fix stomach issues, but also as a sedative for kidney stones, eye disorders, skin disorders, and for surgeries as part of the dressing, similar to the Egyptians. And this is one of my favorites. In Germany, women used honey mixed with crushed bees for beauty and strength, and also to regulate their menstrual cycle.
And my only response to this in the notes was just a huge, like sad crying face emoji thing. I was just like, why would you crush bees and then consume that? That really doesn't sound like a good day to me. I don't know.
No, but if your menstrual cycle's bad enough, I can understand.
Oh, sure. You can try anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never know until you try.
During World War I, the wounds of Russian soldiers were often treated with honey, both to prevent infection and to speed up healing.
Mm-hmm. And if you remember the mad honey from the last episode,
mm-hmm.
Lauren found this factoid.
Oh, yeah. It's difficult to tell exactly how far back the tradition goes, but in Turkey, some people take mad honey as a medicine to treat things like hypertension, diabetes, stomach issues, and sexual dysfunction. Also in Nepal, the Gurun people use mad honey to treat joint pain and to get high. They've been doing both of those things for centuries.
Okay. Didn't see that coming.
It has mild hallucinogenic properties.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
It's part of why it's so easy to, you know, kill enemy soldiers when you've given them mad honey.
Right. That makes perfect sense. And some Eastern cultures still use honey medicinally to this day. And in the West, even, the idea is becoming popular again, too. Derma Sciences, a manufacturer of medical devices, has started selling bandages coated with honey worldwide called, all caps, Meta Honey.
Meta Honey, not M-E-T-A-M-E-D-I. Meta. Just wanted to clarify. Meta Honey.
So it's not some weird joke within
like,
a joke, honey.
Like breaking the fourth wall, honey.
Yes. A couple of recent studies have shown that a low exposure of honey can kill some strains of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And the World Health Organization, I found this interesting, recommends honey as a cough remedy even in children over 1 year of age, going so far as to say there's no evidence cough syrup works any better than honey.
Oh, wow.
It says that in like a government document.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought that was...
Dang. And yeah, as I kind of mentioned at the top, honey is also currently much touted on the internet as a cosmetic skincare treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a very quick rundown of all this long history. Kind of overwhelming amount of history.
Really, so much. That's the Cliff Notes version, because we wanted to spend most of this episode talking about how modern science holds all of this up.
Yeah.
In amazing and strange ways. Mm-hmm. And we will get to some of those details after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
So let's talk about this health thing for a minute, what science, modern science, has to say about it. Or probably several minutes, but not too in-depth, because there's so much.
Yeah, if you happen to go on PubMed, which is a database of medical research papers, and just type in honey, it's just like, yep, mm-hmm. We have something on that.
Yes.
We have all of the somethings on that one. There's even a name for this, ape therapy. Did I say that right? Yeah? Apiary? Apitherapy? Yeah, totally. And there are a few medical-grade honeys that are sold that have standardized levels of antimicrobial properties, like the aforementioned Meta honey.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And for all of those antimicrobial reasons we discussed, honey does have some pretty legit medicinal value.
Yeah. See the first episode for those microbe-related.
These should be enjoyed together.
Yes.
And to be clear, most of the stuff that we're referring to, at least before this and in the first part of this modern day section, is like referring to when honey is applied externally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because the stomach breaks it down too quickly for it to do much in the antimicrobial arena when ingested. Yeah. It's been found to inhibit the growth of 60 bacteria species and is still effective even when diluted up to 9 times.
Wow.
Yeah. Clinical observation has shown that honey can reduce inflammation and it can help speed up the body's immune response to a wound, with phagocytes being activated with honey exposure as low as 0.1%.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's not much.
No.
That's so small.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And a 2007 study found that honey doesn't lead to antibiotic resistant bacteria. So you can keep administering it, which is huge.
Super huge. Because the rise of superbugs is probably a thing that you've heard about, and it's really terrifying.
Yeah.
And we don't want to keep producing bacteria that are like, ha ha, your medicine means nothing to me. 'Cause that's really bad.
Yeah. And I read briefly that there's a problem with India's honey supply because they're putting antibiotics in the honey.
Oh, wow.
And it's like messing the whole thing up. And it's not just India either. It's like countries will import.
Oh, wow.
Because businesses can be terrible.
Sure. Right.
They'll import honey with antibiotics in it. It's a big problem, apparently.
Duly noted.
Yeah. Part of the reason for honey's antibacterial mojo is due to something called osmolarity, which, simplified definition, is the concentration of the solution, like how much is dissolved in a particular amount of water.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of times in nature, things are trying to equal out in a process called osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why honey suffocates bacteria, because it has so little water in its composition. It draws the water out of the bacteria and kills it.
Which is, again, something that we talked about in the former episode.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Honey retains this property even when diluted down like 2 to 12%.
Wow.
Which means it could possibly maybe still work some of its antibacterial magic while in the stomach, like helping out with stuff like diarrhea or any out of whack gut bacteria. Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
A little bit more about the internal stuff later.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the fact that lots of honeys contain hydrogen peroxide as a natural byproduct of the action of one of the enzymes that bees impart during the honeymaking process. That enzyme is glucose oxidase. And hydrogen peroxide, of course, kills things like bacteria. However, even honeys that do not contain hydrogen peroxide can have antimicrobial properties.
Of course.
Of course. Bees also deposit a protein in honey, discovered in 2010 mm-hmm. and named Defensin 1.
Love it.
Which researchers think adds to honey's antibacterial properties.
Yes, and honey may provide some resistance against E. coli, MRSA, and Salmonella. And this is, like, so important, or it could potentially be so important because of what, like we said earlier, that increasing bacterial resistance to traditional antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And honey might also have some antifungal abilities. Studies find honey effective against things like ringworm and athlete's foot.
Okay, so like home treatment for athlete's foot.
Right.
Maybe put some honey on it.
Maybe.
Maybe. There's a disclaimer about this in a minute. Honey does genuinely help with burns and other skin wounds, in part because it helps keep the wound moist, which allows your immune system to better do its thing. Furthermore, its viscosity helps form a protective barrier over the wound. And some honeys stimulate the cells in your immune system that are responsible for creating macrophages, which are what eat harmful bacteria in your body. And honey may simultaneously regulate the action of those macrophages so that they don't just go nuts and attack your own healing cells during the process, which is a pretty common thing, and it's part of what causes inflammation
right.
in a wound. In some cases, honey applied to wounds has been observed to reduce that inflammation.
And here comes the disclaimer.
Fun disclaimer! This does not mean that you should definitely go slather your next flesh wound in honey.
No.
These findings are in laboratory settings or under close medical supervision. Furthermore, honey is a natural product that naturally varies in its content. Like its makeup is going to be different due to the season and the bees and the pollen and the manufacturer and all kinds of other things. So,
so
use it at your own risk.
Yes. Just be mindful. Use good judgment.
Be mindful.
Oh, I didn't even realize.
Sorry.
The first pun of the episode, and we made it pretty far, so.
We did. I feel good about that.
researchers were able to show that honey was as effective treating inflammatory model colitis as the typically prescribed prednisolone. Yes?
Prednisolone, yes. That is what I'm going to continue saying, whether it is correct or not. Let me know if I'm wrong. And this is one area where ingesting honey does in fact seem to help because, colitis can cause inflammation in your digestive tract, which is bad. Prednisolone works well to fight it because it suppresses your immune system, which is unhelpfully attacking your digestive tract, see above macrophages. And this causes and or worsens the inflammation in your gut.
Yeah.
Just calm down, immune system. Jeez.
Yeah.
Chill.
If only.
Yeah.
Just talk to the immune system.
Everything's going to be fine. But, as you can probably guess, suppressing your immune system with more than just calming words can lead to a whole other host of problems, mm-hmm. especially if you're doing it in the long term. You kind of want your immune system to
generally work.
Yeah. But as we said, honey may have those anti-inflammatory properties, and similar to how it works on external wounds, it may help stimulate the repair of damaged intestinal tissue when taken internally.
And there are other internal applications. A couple of studies have found that honey is effective at treating diarrhea and bacterial gastroenteritis, not the viral one, when offered as part of a rehydration treatment instead of glucose.
And just to remind you, this is a medical application that was recommended by the Prophet Muhammad, guys.
Yeah. So it comes full circle.
This is so nuts.
Honey's amazing.
Yeah.
H. pylori, the bacteria behind ulcers, has shown in a few studies to be susceptible to honey's inhibitory properties as well.
And honey may contain antioxidants like flavonoids, which are substances that may help prevent certain diseases like cancer under particular circumstances.
Oh, man. and there's also some very preliminary research being done looking into honey's potential benefits for cardiovascular health, which has been demonstrated in vitro and in preventing the proliferation of bladder cancer cells in specific.
And that's not all.
No. I feel like we could sell honey.
I know.
cognitive and brain function. Some honeys have small amounts of choline and acetylcholine, which may help in brain function. Seriously, you guys, it goes on.
And on.
There are studies linking honey to faster healing of burns, treatment of genital herpes, a lower glycemic index for diabetics, eczema reduction, dandruff reduction.
Oh, man.
But remember, there is no miracle food or cure.
Nope.
Honey may help with these things, some of these things, in some cases. But it's complicated. Use good judgment. Do your research. And also probably talk to a doctor if you're going to use it.
Yeah. I mean, like eating honey where you would usually eat table sugar certainly isn't going to hurt.
Right.
But I mean, like, don't just start adding it like willy-nilly to all your food. Because, you know, remember to watch your overall sugar intake, as we discussed at length, in our sugar and sugar and your health episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one. That's the title.
Right. And we actually kind of need to ask the question, is honey better for you than sucrose table sugar? If you're like me, your knee-jerk response was yes.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
It's made by bees, and bees know what they're doing.
Right. And I ran across an article that was kind of anti-honey.
Oh.
And
was it written by the sugar industry?
Good question. No, it was from a newspaper in Israel, I believe.
Oh, okay.
But I guess anti-honey is too strong. It was very skeptical of honey.
Oh,
very, very skeptical.
That's good. I appreciate a good skepticism.
Yes, I do too. And the researchers asked this question because there hasn't been a direct study on this.
Mm-hmm.
But again, going back to our sugar episode, all that potential badness and terribleness of sugar, it's probably a safe bet that honey is better for you. But the study that they cited in this newspaper I found was out of New Zealand, and rats were fed either sucrose, honey, mixed sugar, and honey, or no sugar at all. And food intake and weight were measured weekly.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the study, the honey-fed rats had gained way less weight than the ones eating the sugar or mixed sugar, even though they ate about the same amount. And the weight of the honey-fed rats and sugar-free rats was about the same. And the honey-fed rats ate more compared to the sugar-free rats.
Huh.
But weight doesn't necessarily equal health.
Nope.
But just for what it's worth.
For what it's worth. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And another thing that honey is often touted as being able to do is help with allergies. Local honey, in specific.
Right.
It's recommended as an allergy cure. And I have a friend who swears by this.
And the idea here is that local bees pick up the very kinds of pollen that you run into outside and transfer some of that pollen to their honey. And therefore, by ingesting that pollen-laden honey, you build up a resistance to that pollen. It's the same concept that goes into allergy shots or, you know, Iocane powder in The Princess Bride.
Yes. So happy The Princess Bride made it into this episode. But science doesn't really find this to be the case, unfortunately. A study from University of Connecticut Health Center conducted, had three groups of allergy havers. One group taking a tablespoon of local honey, the other a tablespoon of corn syrup placebo, and the third taking a tablespoon of commercial honey.
Okay.
And they did this every day for several months, and they found pretty much no difference. Perhaps it is helping with symptoms like coughing or a sore throat if you have that going on. Maybe.
Maybe. And the problem with this concept is that the types of pollen that bees are the most likely to come into contact with, that is that the pollen of bright flowers and of fruiting trees, is not what most people with seasonal allergies have reactions to. People mostly have reactions to other tree and grass pollens. Also, hey, shout out to Slate.com for penning the headline on an article about this. Honey bunches of lies.
Good job, Slate.
Kudos.
Yeah, love it.
Let's talk about some more terrible things about honey. Let's talk about the dark side
Honey's
of honey.
Dark side.
Yeah. But before we do that, let's get a quick word in from our sponsor again. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, and we're about to talk about something that I am pretty sure Lauren is very excited to tell you all about.
I am. We're going to talk about botulism, you guys.
Hurrah.
Yay, confetti, balloons, noisemakers, woo. I get really excited about bacterial infection.
She
y'all,
does.
It's really fascinating. Okay. Honey-induced botulism. Adults generally don't need to worry about this one, but honey carrying the bacteria that cause botulism is why you may have heard that you should never feed honey to babies under 1 year of age. But wait, isn't honey supposed to be antibacterial?
Well, that's what I thought.
Well, let's back the truck up.
Uh-huh.
Explain a little bit about botulism. It's an illness caused by a neurotoxin called botulinum, which is excreted by a couple strains of bacteria, though most often by the bacteria Clostridium botulinum. And these suckers are everywhere. They live in dirt and in waterbed sediment and on plants and in some animal intestines, hanging out doing their thing. And their thing involves the fact that they just happen to create one of the most virulent neurotoxins known to humankind. Why? Great question. I wish I knew. Science wishes it knew as well. And can I go on a tangent to my kind of bacterial tangent here? Because botulinum is so cool.
Is it?
It's so cool. Okay. I mean, it's horrifying.
It
prevents our nerves from stimulating our muscles, which leads to weakness and in severe cases to immobilization and thus death by respiratory paralysis. It's like a really less entertaining version of the Joker's laughing toxin.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be deadly in the magnitude of nanograms, which is a billionth of a gram, which is like a really small amount of neurotoxin.
Very, very small.
But it's also super useful in medicine. Much diluted and very carefully applied, it can help, for example, patients who have overactive muscle conditions that affect their mobility or their eyesight. And it's the working ingredient in Botox.
Wow.
So if you've ever known anyone who's gotten Botox, they got some botulinum neurotoxin in their face.
No big.
Nope.
All good.
So anyway, lucky for us, Clostridium botulinum can't survive when free oxygen, like in the air, is present.
Mm-hmm.
Unluckily for us, when they're in an environment that has oxygen, like the air, they can cocoon themselves in a sort of spore shell casing thing.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, they'll lie dormant in this spore form until they find themselves in an oxygen-poor environment again, and then they'll wake up and get back to their usual routine of eating normal stuff and excreting horrible poison.
You know.
As you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And bees sometimes pick up some of these bacteria spores while they're out collecting nectar, and the spores survive the honey-making process. When we eat the honey, as our bodies break it down, the spores are released and find themselves in the lovely, oxygen-poor environment that is our intestines.
What a great review. Oxygen-poor. Wouldn't recommend it. Unless you're botulism, then
you're into it. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So adult humans' immune systems and gut bacteria, like natural gut flora and fauna, make really quick work of Clostridium botulinum. They kill it right off. Mm-hmm. But babies don't have all of that set up yet. So don't feed honey to babies. By the way, if you suspect a baby might have botulism, that is, if the baby is lethargic and demonstrating markedly less muscle control than usual, especially in the face and neck, if he or she is having trouble latching and sucking and swallowing, contact your doctor immediately. But the treatments that they have these days have super excellent outcomes. So, you know, don't panic. Just definitely call a doctor.
Right.
It can be kind of intensive for a little bit there, but full recovery is expected in like 98% of cases.
Good.
Yay. Modern medical science. I love it. Also, if you're an adult with a compromised immune system and you have severely damaged gut flora due to a high use of antibiotics or something like that, I might check with my doctor about whether it's chill to eat honey. Just to be safe.
Yeah. And going along with that, something else I read is that people with weak immune systems or cancer should only eat pasteurized honey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. That'll raise the temperature enough to usually kill off.
Yes.
Anything that you need to.
And another thing, another dark side of honey, is people do still get mad honey disease.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we talked about. That's how honey was weaponized in past.
Honey, the bioweapon.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Mad honey is more common in raw, aka unprocessed honey, and is more common, too, in New Zealand, thanks to the tutu bush and the vinehopper insect.
Hmm.
Bees gather honey using the honeydew method from the vinehopper insect.
Okay.
Yes.
Gross. Cool.
Gross and cool. This introduces the poison tutin to the honey. But since 2001, beekeepers in New Zealand are required to monitor what's going on within a 2-mile radius when it comes to the tutu bush and the vinehopper insects.
Oh, well, that's great. There was a case in 2008 of mad honey disease. It involved a couple who sought out mad honey near the Black Sea in Turkey, looking for its supposedly sex-enhancing hallucinatory effects.
Okay.
You know, I don't know, whatever you want to get up to. But the thing is the honey's potency is really hard to gauge. And so after consuming increasing doses of it, they wound up in the hospital with heart attack-like symptoms. Don't worry, they're fine.
Okay.
They're doing just fine. Just, you know, if you're going to eat mad honey or other products containing the neurotoxin that makes it work, guaranatoxin, if you're going to do that on purpose, take it easy. Maybe don't do it.
Yeah. Under supervision.
Yeah, take it.
I don't know.
Be good to yourself.
Yes. And in animals, mad honey disease is often lethal. And they usually get it pets or cattle from eating the toxic flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, reminder, if you have a pet that likes a nice potted plant nosh, always check up on the toxicity of plants before you install them in your home.
Yes.
Europe has documented a few cases of honey contaminated with antibiotics used in bee disease treatments.
Uh-huh.
I'm very intrigued by that.
Yeah.
And some honeys might contain the poisonous pyrrolizidine alkaloids, which occurs in somewhere around 3% of flowering nectar plants, but the rate in honey is probably higher because those plants are used specifically for producing seed oil.
Hmm.
They're not good for your liver.
Okay.
Yeah. Terrible. And the best way to avoid these alkaloids is to avoid consuming a large quantity of honey from flowers you don't recognize or those that have been known to contain these substances. And this mostly applies if you're living in an area where these plants are known to grow, which makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're perhaps making your own honey, this is a thing that you might want to watch out for.
Yeah. For sure.
If you are making your own honey, write into us and let us know, because I want pictures of your bees and I want to hear how they're doing. And you could do that every day. And I would be really interested to hear about
it. Yeah, just an update every day would be wonderful.
Yeah.
And speaking of writing into us, that wraps up honey's medicinal long history and it seems like future of medicinal use.
Yeah. All of this research is ongoing.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing what people come up with, especially for the antibacterial resistance kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
It brings us to
a listener mail segment.
Yay.
And
there's only one today because we had so much to say about honey.
Mm-hmm.
And it is from Matthew,
mm-hmm.
who wrote in with, "Hi, Lauren. Hi, Annie. Hi, Matthew.
Hello.
I've been a huge fan of the two of you and Foodstuff since the very first episode aired, or just slightly over a month, but every super fan starts somewhere." Yep. I just finished your most excellent episode on yogurt, and you mentioned the person that invented Go-Gurt being a college professor. It just so happens that I have taken several courses taught by a professor that talked a lot about his involvement with the creation of a popular snack called, wait for it, Go-Gurt.
Ah!
He never explicitly said that he was the sole inventor of it, but if he wasn't, he had a large hand in its creation. He told us about some of the different designs that they tried out before landing on the familiar tubes that we have now, the different recipes that they went through to get the flavor, consistency, and shelf life that Go-Gurt has, and even the marketing process that made it so popular.
Wow.
He's an awesome guy and was one of my favorite professors that I had during my time at Michigan State University. Go green. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting and figured I'd share it with the two of you. Thanks for an informative and entertaining podcast. I look forward to learning more stuffs about food. So thank you for that, Matthew. That's awesome.
Yes. Oh, that's really fascinating. I want to look him up now and.
Yeah. Pick his brain about Go-Gurt and the marketing campaign.
Huh.
All the experiments. I love that so much like science went into this.
Incredibly
that I, like,
goofy.
2 seconds devoured as a kid.
Yeah.
Gone.
And that I mostly remember for being combined with tricks in a marketing campaign. Like, it was like tricks flavored Go-Gurt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And it would have the swirl, the colors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So that brings us to the end of our episode. And please feel free to write us if you know any food inventors or just have general food thoughts.
Uh-huh. Or,
we'd love to hear from you.
Yes. Or have any episode subject requests. We would love to hear them.
Right.
You can get in touch with us.
Yes. We have an email address, foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We're also available on popular social media channels, Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, we are @FoodstuffHSW. That stands for How Stuff Works. And on Instagram, we are just @FoodStuff. Y'all are lovely. And I've been hearing, we've just had such terrific experiences with you guys. Also, a lot of you are apparently growing strawberries like I am, which is really cool.
Yes.
Man, I love strawberries. If I can get any of them this year before the rabbits eat them, I'll be super excited.
Our fingers are crossed for you, Lauren.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Anyway, yes, we hope that we hear from you, and we hope that many more good things are coming your way.